Namaste. So today we'll touch upon a subject which has begun to attract modern mind very much, and that is Tantra. Though for a long time it was not only in disrepute but disregarded from the mainstream spirituality. Even now, if you see all the great spiritual figures, you will see Vedanta, people talk about Veda and Vedanta, Upanishad, all that we will know. But very few will know that what are the Tantra literature, what are the types of Tantra. Like everybody knows there are four Vedas, or at least the three main and the fourth one which was added later on. People know how many Upanishads are there. How many lines of Tantras are there? If this question is put, many people are at loss. Though the strange part is, much of the fabric of Indian life is woven through Tantra. Take the example of Durga Puja Navratri, which we are celebrating. It's through and through Tantra. The whole story is about Tantra. So there are these three types of Tantras which are emerged from three lines of, you know, deities. One of them is Shaiva Tantra, which is well known. So Shiva and Shakti. So it is the Shakti aspect. The other is Vaishnava Tantra, and the third is Shakti Tantra. These are the three main Tantras. But what exactly is Tantra? Tantra means the warp and woof of creation. Tan, that word means extension. So how the divine extends himself into this creation? What is this dance of creation? What are the energies at play in it? What is it, Prakriti, which has ensnared us? So all these things, as the Vedanta would say, all this understanding about the countless forces at play which has woven this wonderful, delightful, dangerous creation is about Tantra. So why the Vedantin shuns it? Because he says, I am not interested in that. My goal is to come out of this wonder web. So he is only looking for that much which will help him come out. But the Tantric says, no, I want to understand. I want to enjoy this web. I will also come out. He also, in typical Tantra, ultimately you come out of the web. But he says, I will take the joy along the way. The Vedantin says, no. Joy is dangerous. I don't want joy. I want to just come out of this web. Find an exit route. So what that Vedantin does, he learns to focus any energy, because you have to start from there. You are caught up in that dance of energy. You can't just, you know, jump out just like wishful thinking. So he picks up one energy, one strand, and starts climbing upstream. The Gyan Yogi picks up thought, the power of thought, one idea. Through it climbs upstream. Very difficult, because climbing upstream is very difficult. Gravitating down is easier. But by holding on to that, climbing higher and higher in thought, eventually he goes beyond thought. And he says, now I am free. I have pure awareness. Then the bhakta catches one emotion, feeling. And through the feeling current, it goes further, 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 and eventually starts loving the divine as the lover and beloved, and sees him everywhere. Eventually, through that door of feeling, he comes out and is one with the all love, all beatitude, all ananda. And the man of action picks up work, the energy in karma, picks it up and pursues it. Where does energy come from? From nature. So he learns that, you know, it's not me. I am not the doer. Then who has sanctioned the work of nature? Nature is the worker. It's working through the instrument. So he frees himself from the instrument and says, well, instrument is only an instrument. I have not shaped it. Then he learns to distinguish between nature and I am the worker. Nature is the worker. Then who is the master of nature? The Lord is the master of nature. So by constantly offering, referring every energy to the Lord, again it becomes free. So this is the Vedanta. What about Tantra? Tantra says, but what is this work? How did it all began? What is knowledge? And knowledge, not just the knowledge which liberates. What is this knowledge which has entered into every detail of creation? How does it operate there? Why does it operate there? What is this love? What is this ananda which is in every particle of creation? So he starts his energy right from the rock bottom. Vedantin starts from the mind, one of the three powers of the mind, typical Vedantin. Sometimes he can start from the breath. In ancient time, they started from the body, Hatha Yoga. But even when they started from the body, ultimately, there was an element of Tantra in it, because, you know, that energy, if you see in Hatha Yoga, you will see Kundalini. to an extent. But in Raj Yoga, which starts from the mind, you will see that it has been done away with because its purpose is over. But a typical tantra starts from there. Where is this energy gone into? So the story which I have narrated earlier, also the bride of Brahman, the Brahman, out of him the Shakti comes, goes into the nether, inconscient, starts from there. So tantra starts by releasing this energy which is trapped in matter and pursuing its entire course upstream. It's not interested in picking up one strand and going. So we see this several times I've spoken about it. So I will not go into all the details about the, but just the Kundalini part. Where is this energy? It's in matter. How do you awaken it? So in a typical tantra, you awaken it by the power of will and forcing it to wake up by the power of the mantra. It's there in Vedas, there is the power of the mantra with which the caves are open. But here, the energy is released from matter simply by concentrating. So in a typical Kundalini practice, the concentration will be on Muladhara, with one mantra to open the door. Then after some time, this energy is released. Then you pull it upward. And then it comes to the next level. Another, and at each level, this energy releases and makes you realize all its manifold play at that level. For us, matter is, Muladhara means my body and its functioning. But it will spread into matter and all the powers that are there in matter operating. That's why many of these tantrics who are only operating at that level, they have a tremendous power over matter. And they will do things which you will wonder, how is it possible? Materializing things or bringing something. There was a Babaji who could bring any brand of mithai from anywhere in the world. It's a Siddhi. So the danger of it was that you could easily get, because the play of energy is so tremendous. Even little power can get into the head. That's why a typical Vedantin shuns it. My God, I may sudden, because these powers will release by its nature. It is power. So power over matter. So some of these tantric mothers speaks about Teo. He was a tantric. So mother speaks about how he could deviate the lightning. And she says, I have actually seen it. He demonstrated it. He said, come with me. So actually there was lightning and she could see that it changed its course and went somewhere else. Because this is the power. You will see, read it in, Ravana, who had all these Navagrahas and all these powers he had captured. Because, by this tantra, and I am talking still of the Muladhara and the next level, these Manipuri, Swadhisthan, Chakras. So you have these powers which are there, which are released into the, the little individual expands into the cosmic level at that particular knot. So from the Muladhara, one rises further. Then sometimes it can lead to inordinate appetites. Hunger of various kinds, including sexual, including food. It's very beautifully described in Pandit Gopi Krishnan's book, famous book on Kundalini. He had a spontaneous awakening. So there again, this energy can go out of control. Because you don't know, all these appetites have risen in you. And you don't know. So some people use it for all kinds. Many of these Rakshasas who want this tremendous energy practice such things. Then ambition, third level. So there it's, even more powerful. So it makes you succeed in all these forces which will lead you to success in any kind of battle and even games. Nalinda describes one, he says about one of the tantrics. So there was a match going on when he had gone to Bengal during one of the periods. So he says that one of the team had engaged a tantric. So that is called match fixing of the olden type. Okay, now it's a different kind. So the tantric was paid to make this particular thing win. So he says, I actually saw that though the opponent was powerful, but this tantric would just laugh and he had some little, magic things in his hands, some sticks, each of them was representing. So what he does in that magic, he starts invoking, connecting them with that person. You need some kind of connection. That's why tantrics of this kind, what is known as black magic, they need something of yours. Maybe a picture, maybe a, now of course they do, I don't know whether they do with Aadhaar card or not, but please don't give any personal belonging to such people. They're looking for it. And they will use a picture, they will use a hair strand, some body part, dress to create a formation. Now this thing represents that person. So he had already gathered. So the game is now fixed. So suddenly he'll make one of them fall. And that person will fall there. And when he'll fall, now a good player has gone. So he made four or five people fall successively. And thereby the weaker team won. Now this obviously up to a point. This is obviously for perverted uses. But the tantrics don't care about it. They are living in a consciousness which is neither right or wrong. They are just using energies like a scientist. So to an extent, Tantra is much like a science of the scientist. When a scientist, you know, when he discovered the nuclear energy, did he say that I am doing a wrong thing or right thing? It's only when the nuclear bomb was dropped that he said, oh my God, what have I done? So because you are discovering energies and you are playing with it. That's how a tantric looks at it. But one may get caught up in that play because it's very intoxicating, very tantalizing, and that's why the advice was to stay away from Tantra. Or there are those who are very focused and they keep climbing upstream, upstream, upstream. Up till the heart, there is the danger zone. When you reach this here, then you can plunge them in deep inside into the psychic fire, and from here the upcurrent becomes easier. So there again, there were two streams of energies. And that's what you see. Many of these stories in India, they are symbols of that. So typical stories, there is Purnakum, which is done at, Allahabad, Prayag. And there you have the meeting of Ganga, Jamuna and Saraswati. Now look at the story, it's very interesting. What is there at the meeting point? There is Amrit. So if you go there and drink that water where the three rivers are meeting, you are actually tasting Amrit. That's how it is said. Don't try it. It's not very clean now and very difficult to know. Now, Ganga and Jamuna can be seen. Where is Saraswati? It is a looped river, lost river. So, of course, there is a physical way of looking at it that Saraswati was actually a river. And I'm not going into that. There's a different dimension. But look at the symbol. So, there are two currents of energies which run up and down. And medical science testifies to it. One which is exciting kind. What is called in medical science, it's a misnomer, sympathetic. So sympathetic, you feel sympathetic is good, no? But sympathetic means it excites you. The whole system is put on very rapid movement. And the other one is parasympathetic, it balances. So it's calming, cooling. So one is which is excites and the other calms and cools. Actually in the human body, you have actually across the spine physical arrangement of nerves, and they are autonomous nervous system. It was believed that they are not under your control, though modern research shows that you can bring them under your control. So they were part of the autonomous system, where there is the current this way, that way. In the whole day they are rising up and down. So what was Jamuna? Jamuna is the Chanchal river. She is the sister of death. Look at the whole mythology. Yam and Yami. Yami in Hindi becomes Yamuna. And if Yami and Yama meet, they meet annually once, then there is this Bhaidushtika. Look how stories are intertwined. Completely tantric story. So Yama once a year comes to meet Yami. And then Yami ties, a thread around Yama. And Yama says, okay, on this day, whichever sister ties a thread to the brother, he'll be protected. So that's celebrated in India as Bhai Dooj. You will have after 2 days after Diwali. But the story is very interesting. It is the meeting of this current and death, which is, right, Yama. Yama is actually it's not death, just it's the guardian, restrainer. So when you restrain the flow of Yami, is like Chanchal all the time. You look at Yamuna. I don't know whether you have experienced or not, but Yamuna is a very chanchal river. Now when all this chanchalta, when all this kind of restless activity is restrained, Yama, then there is when the two meet, then to an extent you are freed from akal mrityu, because otherwise this hyperdrive it's known now even in medicine, it can actually fail the body. But in body, there is another balancing river, which is the Ganga. So Ganga is quietly streaming upward. Sometimes she can become, one of her tributaries like Mandakini. She can create havoc, but generally she is a quieter river. So you have two streams. So what about Saraswati? We don't normally experience. She is the looped river. But if Saraswati awakens, which is the Sushumna in between, so there is Ida, Pingala and Sushumna, the middle river, Nadi, then there is the balancing of the two. And when the two are in perfect harmony and balance, Shobindo describes in Savitri with the line, force one with unimaginable rest. It is the union of Shiva and Shakti. And when you have that complete peace and complete power, force, that's the time this middle nadi awakens, Sushumna. And when it awakens, then you have become a candidate for immortality. So that's the Amrit in Prayagraj. Shobindo gives just as a footnote about this story. Just as a footnote, there is a tantric symbol. Now, the beauty is, like everything, human beings want to find a mechanical method. So people found that through breathing, how? Because it's connected to the breath. So they found that if you breathe with the left nostril, it is activating the other side of current. It's a modern medical knowledge. They had it just by empirical wisdom. If you breathe through the right nostril, you will have the left side activation. Just try to see, observe, and you will see that throughout the day, there is switching off and on of nostrils. Okay, that's why some people prefer lying to one side, another side. Have you seen preferences? So it's all very fascinating. So there was actually, even sometime back, 1.5 century back, there was actually a instrument which somebody had created to measure this activity. But it went into disrepute because he found that just by regulating the breath, you can get free of many diseases. So in typical, the only aspect of this breath regulation used in Vedanta is Nadi Shuddhi. So you do left nostril right, right nostril left, so that you are trying to balance to an extent they can be. So little bit of Yamuna, little bit of Ganga, and they, after some time they balance. That is the principle behind Nadi Shuddhi. It's a mechanical method. From one pole you are trying to balance the other. But whatever method you use, once they start awakening, there are two upcurrents through which one can rise. One is the Chanchal Yamuna, which is the left hand path. So she is responsible for all the activities which we normally call as tebu. Tebu is what? Restrain, yama. Don't do them. So the typical left hand tantric will say, no, I will do them. Why not? There also there is the same Shakti is there also. So Madhura, Meen, and some of these places are, you know, strange energies. I don't know, Ujjain, have you been to that temple where you have Bhairavnath temple, Bhairavnath, and you will go there. First sight you will see is cobras on that, you know. As you are climbing up the stairs, somebody's cobra is dancing here, there. Of course, with people, not alone. But it's not a good sight. Then when you go to the Bhairava's actual statue, you know what is offered as prasad there? Alcohol. And you are supposed to drink it. So up till that point, I said, no, I am not going to do this. No, Bhairav, they will be rushed. I said, oh, super Bhairavi, mother is there. This is too much, you know, just because prasad. And the whole atmosphere is not good. Somebody dragged, you know. And just near that, you will see a river. I think it's a river, Shipra Nadi, one of the backwaters, where there are tantrics who do worship, and they actually drag half burnt bodies of corpses, and they eat meat. You know why? Now you see, in Vedanta you have to reach a state where tatona vijugupsate. The man who is realized shrinks from nothing because he's seeing the divine everywhere. It's the ultimate state. But in Tantra you start from there, shrink from nothing. This is your condition. If you are shrinking from anything, how will you play with energy? Energy is everywhere. Divine is pure existence. So you can be a witness and not shrink. You can see somebody eating meat and not shrink. That is a Vedantin. He is a witness self. He is not partaking in any of this. Suryo yatha sarvalokasya chakshu nalipyate chakshu vaya dosha. But can you eat meat without that, liptata? That is very difficult. But this is a preliminary for Tantra. So Sri Ramakrishna, when he had the tantric guru, he said, you have to eat a little bit of human meat. So this is the most horrifying activity, no? So he said, but that I can't do. He said, but you have to do. He said, there must be some alternative. He said, if you eat your own vistha, because it's part of your own waste coming out of your own body. She said, that I can do. So he took a little bit and tasted it. Because this shrinking has to go. If now in Vedanta, how you will do it? Equanimity. Because your aim is not to enter into energies. Equanimity. But in Tantra, you go in the middle and free yourself from shrinking. So many of them, they start drawing all the patterns break down. So many of these tantrics can derive energy by eating wood or paper. I have seen it. Eating wood and actually drawing energy. Why? Because all conditionings. Now, human body is formed in a way. It is conditioned in a certain way. But it is not necessary that it should be like that. It's one formulation. But actually, you can draw energy from the whole creation. You don't even need to eat. Mother speaks of this, Madame Theon, that she would keep a flower or a fruit and she would draw energy. You can simply be in nature and draw energy. So it's a question of that portion opening up. But left hand tantra is obviously very dangerous because you are entering into energies which are very, very dark. But that is the one people are mostly fascinated. Try to Google search tantra. One of the things you will find is tantra sex. That's it. Because this is what they have understood. Well, yes, there is a whole science even related to that. But you know what is that? Where there is complete mastery over desire. You can't have. I know about somebody who had once practiced, it's called Vamachar. So it used to be practiced in one of the doctor friend's house. So he said, you know, I didn't know he's a left-hand tantric, but I was very surprised to know the process. I said, what process did you realize? He said, they have this, the couple will meet, but there will be no actual physical relation. You have to have complete mastery despite everything. So that's the process that they used to use. But this is dangerous. So Sri Aurobindo says it was a bold and courageous but premature attempt. At one point this part also has to change, because in the totality of creation everything comes from that one source. But they tried what had to be done in the end, they tried in the beginning. If you read Nalinida's article on To Love Man, you will see that this is the penultimate, where even in, you know, all these energies you can handle, but generally nobody can even dare. But most people practice the safer right hand path. So right hand path is more of the path of knowledge, power of knowledge. This is the power of Ananda in creation. So this is the safer path, and Dakshin Panthi, and that's much, most of the tantrics follow that path, where you appease these various gods and goddesses beyond a certain level. They don't enter into the lower levels. They enter into the directly, most of them will start with the psychic energies. Vaishnava Tantra from the emotional center. Shiva Tantra can start from Pashupat. He is Pashupati. Pashupati means the whole animal nature of yours. He is the lord of that. So it starts from there. But Vaishnava Tantra will start from here. And then you go upward. Up current. So it is a safer part. But it means certain energies are completely blocked. They are not brought into play. And as you can see, it is a whole world of forces and powers of which we have no idea. And the path was basically all these energies were devis. They were given a certain name, form, symbol. So in Tantra, you will find these three, four things. The idea was to ultimately the devi of the power that is holding control over this area, that they want to bring into their control, so that human consciousness, so that she will now obey. Once they are mastered, they will go to next level, next level, next level. So you will see that for each of the center, there is a particular god or goddess, depending on which tantra you are following. In Navratri, we see starts from right down below. Dash Mahavidya of the Upanishad, you will see Dhumavati, you know, like that. Bagulamukhi at different centers. And even the images are like that. So they would follow a particular, and there, how did they try to bring this particular little goddess in their control? By three methods, very mechanical. One was mantra. There were sounds which corresponded to a particular goddess, and they tried to bring her under their control. A very minor, you can't, the divine is beyond everything. But this is how the tantrics practice. Like the mother says, there is the Mahakali, she is golden in color. But Mahakali, as Kali on the vital plane, assumes this color, dark complexion. Then there are crores of Kalis which are active in the world, One Kali for earthquake, one Kali for this, and they had control over that. And they are also called Kalis. So the name should not, you know, deceive us. So you can't have any of these mantras will not be able to, any of these great goddesses. But the lower ones you can bring into. But one must know that bringing a Devi into your control is a very dangerous thing. Because if you, then you have to do what she says. Though you have bound her, but you are bound by her. So I know of tantrics who would say that, you know, we are looking for somebody whom we can transmit this, because otherwise they won't get mukti. That Devi will not leave them after you are dead and gone. She will capture you. So say, now you do my work. Because you have brought in. There's many of them are very dark energies. And these tantrics try to master them. And through mantra, yantra, each diagram is a symbol. Higher symbols, highest is Sri Vidya in ancient traditional India. Of course, now it is mother's symbol. And similarly, we see mantras, different mantras, bij mantras. Then you have higher mantras, Ya Devi Sarvabhuteshu, where you represent bringing one aspect. Shanti Rupen, Shakti Rupen, Vidya Rupen, Jnana Rupen, Anand Rupen, etc. You can keep multiplying it. But Shurbindo, what he gave was the highest mantra which you can ever imagine. So he has taken all of them to the apex. Om Anandamayi, Chaitanyamayi, Satyamayi Parme. You will never find it in any of the tantric mantras, because the tantrics never went that far. So Anandamayi, Satchidanand. So you have the Anandamayi, Chaitanyamayi, Satyamayi. But they have seen always one aspect, another aspect. Even the symbols will be accordingly. And so on through yantra, mantra and puja. So there was a particular way to worship each deity. And because of its dangerous nature, in tantra you could not practice without a guru. So tantra could never be practiced without a guru. Vedanta, you don't need really a physical guru. Though a lot of gurus are there who would like to, you know. Because in Vedanta you have the Upanishad, Gita. You read a passage, you meditate on the mantra, try to live it, and you will realize. Because it's different. But in tantra you need a guru. And that's why Sri Aurobindo, when he was asked about coming to ashram, he said, you need to be here during the stages of physical transformation. That is the time he insisted that people should be here. Otherwise, you could come here, receive the central influence and go back. But physical transformation was very far off. But basically, again, things like going out of the body, activating this energy. So tantra should never be practiced without the physical guru being around. So this is the famous story of this Pandit Kavi Gopinath. So he wrote to Sri Aurobindo because all his energy had gone chaotic. I have read his book. Frightening. He went into depression, beyond control, because he didn't know how to handle them. So he wrote to Sri Aurobindo, and he had, of course, by then approached a particular master. And Sri Aurobindo explains very beautifully in that letter. It's a detailed letter. Then he says, but your experiences have followed a very specialized line of yoga. We don't deal with that. So you need to come in contact with a person who has mastered this line and be in contact with him. Because otherwise he can do it, but that's not his work. He says that we are here for a different work. So this is the left hand and the right hand path. And these energies climb up, and ultimate goal is that on the way you are taking the power and the joy, and eventually you reach this highest layer, which is in the crown of the head, and pass beyond where this energy which was concealed in matter meets its lord, her lord, and becomes one. So ultimately it is the goddess who has taken you to the lord, and you have merged with the supreme. So why it went into disrepute? After all, if moksha is the process, ultimate goal, even in tantra end point was liberation. So why you want to go through all this risk and danger? Unless you are attracted towards power. So Vedanta became more famous. There was a time when many Vedantins would not even accept Tantra as authentic. Later on, it was regarded as authentic because the seeds were found in the Vedas. There is the Divine Mother, there are the feminine energies. So overall, after much debate, discussion, I don't know where they had these discussions, but they decided ki, okay, we'll include tantras as authentic literature, and they were called agamas. Means they are not human in origin, their origin is from the divine inspiration. So much of what we call, again, you have the black magic and the white magic. Black magic is all these, everything has a force and energy. So diseases. You have energies who are creating diseases. You know, I don't know whether you remember or not, when we were children, you had Sitla Mata, whom you propitiated for pox. And for everything, there was a goddess. And people used to do that worship. So there are actual forces and beings of that kind. And obviously, they are of a very dark and low order. So the black magic was where people mastered them and used them for their low purposes. Like, you know, if nuclear technology comes in the hands of, you know, North Korea, you know what will happen. You just can't help it. You can't give him a lesson in democracy, and, you know, he is going to misuse it, because that's how the Asura and the Rakshasas work. But Rakshasa and Asuras, they want to dominate and control, so they want these powers. Whereas those who wanted liberation, they didn't use, they preferred the Vedantic method, because they're easier and ultimately, but you miss out on creation. So those who wanted also to have that, you know, Devi and Puja and to have the joy, they followed the right hand path and eventually went into that liberation. So this was the, and this is the whole process of Kundalini awakening. If you see energy passing from one layer to another, to another, to another, and eventually escaping into the crown of it. So at each level, you have to hold the energy, experience its cosmic extension. Each center is what? A center is simply a funneling of the cosmic energy into a small little outlet. That's all a center is. So it's like your tap. So what happens is, where is the water coming in tap? It's coming from the main store. Where is it coming into the main store? From the sea or the river. And from there it is distributed. So individual centers are like taps. So how much energy is given to us ordinarily? What is needed for our petty aims? So if the aim is low, that much energy only you will get. But if your aims increase, you will automatically start receiving more energy, which is a spontaneous kind of tantra, which happens in people, they don't realize it. You see certain creative people, how they receive so much energy spontaneously, simply because they are into a kind of work driven by that, or certain ambitious, highly ambitious people. People sometimes ask, I think some of the politicians, they hardly sleep. They ask, how is it? Yes, because even if you are driven by extreme ambition, you will draw energy. Or with a will to do, serve your country, you will draw energy, because now you have suddenly expanded your consciousness into something greater. But that is different from consciously doing a yoga as the tantrics do. So what is the relation of this to integral yoga? Well, the relation is very simple. In integral yoga, you have Vedanta and the Tantra together. Because it's about world changing. You can't change the world if you don't understand the play of forces of the world. It's not about liberation. But in integral yoga, the first step is the Vedantic step, liberation. And for that, the method, if you go classically in synthesis of yoga, Shobindu first speaks about the liberation which one has to arrive at by the Vedantic methods. Which means the yoga of the Gita, or a typical Upanishadic yoga where you withdraw, step back. If you see that I am not this, I am not this, you arrive. And when you have arrived there, then the play of the Shakti and the transformation. But Sri Aurobindo knew very well that individually he was experiencing all that, but human beings can't handle this. So he was waiting for the Divine Mother. When Divine Mother came and took charge, then the yoga became very simple. It was no more Vedantic and Tantric method, but just opening to the Mother. So the Divine Mother holds within herself the Ishwara also. So what is that aspect? The masculine and feminine. In Vedanta you have the masculine element, which is existence and awareness. So consciousness is the meeting ground. Consciousness has two aspects, awareness and force. So existence and awareness is masculine. What is his work? Masculine energy, to sit back, relax and give sanction to the play. So he will sit and watch the play and probably watch, you know, cricket match or whatever is going on. And he has the remote in his hands. And what is the force and ananda? Creatrix, the energy, the feminine principle. So you see, even it's reproduced in everyday life. So the masculine element is at play when you are, it's not about man and a woman, but the masculine element is at play. In men it is more common that they were just looking for opportunity when they can just sit back and, you know, just relax. But the feminine element, you see, You'll work there, you'll come home, you want to work, and you get joy. You ask, why are you doing it? Ananda. Man's ananda is in just witnessing. So there is the masculine element which has experiences the static calm and the ananda that comes in calm. But the feminine element is creatrix. So that's why Shrivindo says when you experience peace, it means the Purusha aspect is prominent. And when you experience rapture and ananda, it is the Divine Mother, the Shakti that is there. So everywhere you have the play of these three. At our level it is Purusha and Prakriti, diminished play. So which is the highest Purusha within us? Within us, within the human frame. The first Purushas you will meet, existence and awareness, is physical, vital and mental Purusha, the three Purushas. At each level there is a certain awareness and a certain existence. But at each level you also have the threefold forces. So you see in the triple soul forces, you have the physical Purusha, the Madonna of Mother of Suffering, who endures everything. At the vital Purusha, you have the Rajogun Prakriti, which is emerging out. So Tamaguni, Rajoguni Prakriti. And who is she? She is the battler, the might. At the same time, she is Lakshmi, Durga. And at the mental Purusha, you have the knowledge and wisdom, the Satguni Prakriti. So you have both. Sri Aurobindo has brought out the beautiful combination of them. And then, but they are not the highest Purusha or highest Prakriti. There is something still deeper. So that deeper is the psychic being. So in within human being, if you want to understand Prakriti, you have to go further, deeper. Most people who become witnessing, you'll see many of these courses, Vipassana and all that, mental Purusha. But Sri Aurobindo is not happy with that. Mental Purusha can watch, maybe at some point it can help in liberation, but more dangerously, it can lock us in a state of mental ego and one won't understand it. So go deeper and discover the Chaitya Purusha. He's the master. He's the leader. So when you discover that Purusha, then you have the Chaitya Purusha and the Prakriti. Now if Chaitya Purusha wants, he can liberate. Or if the Chaitya Purusha wants, he can enter into change of nature. So what is that next level of Purusha and Prakriti? It is Brahman and Maya. So if you go further, you discover this Prakriti eventually tends to enter into a indefinable, indeterminate stage from where different forms are emerging. So Maya itself has two sides. Avidyamai, where you discover this multiplicity suddenly vanishing into a vast impersonality, the Brahman. Or Vidyamai, where you know that there is only one power which is acting, but she is assuming all these forms. So one can enter. But further up the scale, there is Ishwara and Shakti. So you see from here, so ultimately the play of Purusha and Prakriti is supposed to reproduce Ishwara and Shakti. What is the difference? In Ishwara and Shakti, their togetherness is complete, perfect, perfect harmony, totally in sync. There is what the existence conceives, the Shakti automatically creates. Knowledge and will are one. But as it comes down and down, so at the our human level, that's why it is ignorance, we see the difference between knowledge and will. Of course, our knowledge is a limited knowledge, will is a limited will. And we may know things, the mental Purusha most of the time, but the mental will cannot, executed. Even when we begin to enter into the psychic being, some degree of alignment begins in nature. Alignment, not a change. So in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, it was find first the Purusha, the Chaitya-satta, the psychic being, and let it take the journey upward of change of nature. But with the coming of the mother, because mother holds within herself the Purusha, even such God himself, she's the one was there supreme behind the God. That's how Sri Aurobindo. Why? Because even if God, as we understand, form in the play, Sachidanand, he must emerge out of her. It is she who will shape. All execution is hers. The moment you go past her, it is the state where you cannot say anything. So the moment you say anything, God, in whatever way you conceive, that conception will come only from the Divine Mother. So the Divine Mother is in the forefront. So here, the Kundalini is no more by forced will, which is a play of the ego. and dangerous. You need all kinds of, you know, gurus and yantra and mantra and puja and vidhi, vidhan, because these little goddesses are very fussy. If you do a mistake, then you get a nice slap. Because it's like, you know, you see, in a typical office setup, the last man on the gate will be the most fussy person. He will not let you in because he has been given instructions. But the top man can cancel all the orders, isn't it? He will say, no, let the person come because he's the top man. So when we dabble into, people who dabble into these energies to get power, they must know that it is very dangerous. That's why black magic can kill a person. And this black magic cannot affect somebody who is already open to the Divine Mother. Why? Because she is the origin of all power. If it tries to come near, it will bounce back. And when it bounces back on the other person, it is disastrous because that energy goes back. Literally, she goes back and says, where did you send me? That fellow is protected by the supreme power and you want me to go and, you know, engage with him? Now I'm going to destroy you. So because that energy, you know, these gods and goddesses don't care about us the way, you know, an avatar, or they don't care. Breaking a human body is for them, it's like plasticine. You finish and throw it, break it and throw it away. So, but there are people who are interested in it, like people who like to handle nuclear energy. But a yogin in integral yoga, the way is first the liberation. So when we turn to Divine Mother, she'll not start straight away the transformation process. She'll first teach us these fundamentals, help us to discover the psychic being. And simultaneously, she will work upon nature. And here the Kundalini opens from above downward. So it is a safe process. In traditional Tantra, it opens from below. So the lower energies get activated. And when they get activated, you can imagine what happens to these appetites. And with no control of the higher kind. They are trying only through, you know, that's why the guru is important, because he is supposed to have mastered. But in this yoga, it starts from above downward. So the mind centers will open. So it's wonderful. You get all the intuitive knowledge, glimpses, inspiration, all these. And it's very, very beautiful because the mind has expanded into that. Then lower down, she will come, speech. And all my speech is now a song divine. Then the heart. Heart expands into wideness, a different love begins to pour, sweetness. It cannot be confined into a cage because that center is open. When this heart center opens, you can start feeling love for every creature. Even those who would normally repel you, you start feeling love. But that's the heart center. For every creature, you begin to feel that. And then it comes lower down. And when it touches upon the next chakra, it is about ambition. So what happens about these ambitious centers? It is changed into serving the divine. So when it touches here, means you will get an urge to serve the divine. And if you don't get an urge to serve the divine, then that means this will not be worked upon. Take it in writing. Because this will remain. If it opens up without diverting these energies into divine service, it's disastrous. That's why Mother says there are two main obstacles to yoga. And they are both related to these lower centers. Ambition and sex. Because they relate to below. Till heart, emotional attachment, she says you can turn. When she was asked about different kinds of, I think recently somebody had posted also, different kinds of relation between a man and a woman. She says, what is acceptable, what is not acceptable in yoga. She says, if you have relation of a purely physical kind, cut it off. It's dangerous. If you have relation of a vital kind, well, attachment or all, to an extent you can work upon it. If it is emotional, it can easily be turned toward the right direction. If it's a mental companionship, very much. And of course, if it's a psychic and spiritual relation, it's fine. But that physical was the one which was dangerous. But at some point, this energy enters. The power enters and opens up the Swadhisthan chakra. And that time, I think it is Manipuri anyways, somebody would... The chakra which is right here. So anahat, below anahat. So this when this center opens, all these energies will begin to rise. And the ordinary things which people want, if you ask somebody before this center opens, what do you want to do? He'll say, I want to be, maybe, you know, I want to do a good job, all these things. But the moment this enters and opens, Manipuri. Yeah. So the moment this opens up, then you can't be satisfied with anything which is low. You see, in Durga Stotra, Sri Aurobindo says, make us great, make our efforts great. So mighty deeds. You can't be satisfied with the small, the low, the obscure. Okay, I want to earn a livelihood, bourgeois ideal. I want to have enough money for my retirement. It will crash because this center is opened up. But because it opens from above downwards, the mind centers are open, the armies of light are there, the heart centers are open, they will subordinate and turn these energies into serving the divine. You see, typical example is Hanuman. He has all these Ashtasiddhis. But if you ask Hanuman, what is your aim in life? He will say, Bina Ram ke kaj ke mohe kahan vishram. I don't know what is rest because I want to serve my Lord, who is Rama. So all these people who had such tremendous sense of service, means up till this point the opening has taken place and the transformation. Then it comes lower down. That's where the real battle comes. But because all these centers have opened, it becomes easier. Take for instance the sexual centers and other appetites open up. But because already there is this urge to turn everything into divine service, because the love for the mother is so strongly rooted, because that wisdom is already there, so one is able to handle it and turn it in the right direction. And then finally, the physical body, which is, you know, the transformation. But the mother says there are centers which go below, and she speaks of the subconscious center in the knees, the inconscient, which is still below, and one which is even above the Sahasrara. That's because the mother is divine mother. So she has spoken of more centers than what traditional Tantra Yoga speaks of. So when it starts acting on the body, then subconscious will be touched. So what happens when the subconscious centers are touched? All the past, which you thought was gone, will come up and say, I'm here as a ghost. So what do you do? The method is the same. Mother, mother, mother. Take it, take it. Mother speaks of that. All these are countless stories even in the Tantra literature, but I am not going into it because paucity of time. But they will rise up, the subconscious pasts. And you have to allow it to be slowly dissolved, knot after knot, under the supreme power which is descending down the current. And then finally the inconscient. Inconscient will simply say, do whatever you want. I will not release. The body will remain a bundle of habits. And that's when you have to keep offering it. This is the last struggle which you find in the agenda. Struggle with the cells of the body under the domain of inconscient. Rigidly tied. Inconscient also takes a hold on the mind. I don't believe rigid mind. It takes a hold and doesn't let go. So eventually the same process is the same in this yoga. The divine power, the divine mother, we have to keep offering and she will keep on changing. But as it comes lower down, the change will take much longer time. You should be ready. It's much easier for the heart and head mind center to open. Very easy. And one can have experiences which are rare, durlabh in Vedantic yoga. But when it touches lower down and still lower down and the physical, it's it. Interminable battle, because nobody has even attempted it. Even in Tantra, you bring out the energy, you don't try to change physical nature. It's an individual achievement. You release the energy and take it up. Your body doesn't change. It learns some new things, like it can feed on this, that, it can remain awake for a long time. Those physical siddhis are not transformation. Physical siddhis are where for a moment you are superimposed something like a different law upon this part. The instruments are the same. That's why they tend to break down. That's why the tantric has to rush up from that plane further up. But transformation means that the law of the body changes. And it's a collective process by its nature, because the law has changed. Some people will become samples for the change. And then it will spread automatically in earth nature. So this is the process, this is what Tantra is, about dealing with energies, powers, gods, goddesses mainly. It deals with the force and ananda aspect of creation. Vedanta is about existence and awareness, the masculine aspect. And feminine is the dynamic side, it's put in different ways. The masculine is in the passive side, and the dynamic side is the feminine energy. So when it is said integral divine, sometimes we'll hear this word in Sri Aurobindo's yoga. Integral divine is where the masculine and the feminine are in perfect togetherness. This we find in supermind and above. Below that, they are never in perfect rhythm. There we have the perfect dance, togetherness. But here, they are, Purusha is wanting one thing, Prakriti is going its own way. And therefore, we have these seizures and all. And this understanding is important, relevant in practice. The more the Prakriti strays away from the Purusha, at whatever level, the more turbulent it becomes. So Kali's wild and reckless dance, why she has jumped away from... See, Shiva is with Parvati. When Parvati leaps into the warrior mood, she becomes either Durga or Kali. There is no Shiva there. Shiva has to come to stop her play. Because she has moved away. There is a purpose in it. So the more the nature moves away from the center point, the self, the more it becomes chaotic and turbulent. But there is a meaning. Why? Because there she is creating absolutely in an inordinate way. That's why if you go into the quantum world, you will see the same chaos as you discover in the, but there it's not chaos, it is called indeterminate spirit. Why? Because that energy is now moving towards inconscient and plunging into that. That was the original thing. So the more it goes there, the more there is chaos and turbulence. Like Yamuna. And the more it comes towards the self, it becomes calmer and calmer. So you have in threefold forces, soul forces also, we see the same thing. Triple soul forces. That it starts from there and gradually, when it comes to the mind level, it becomes calmer. But there also, Savitri says that all of you are aspects of my soul, but not the soul itself. And she goes further. That is not found in typical tantra. In typical tantra, you travel up current, from there you go out. But in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, we'll see a divergence taking place from there. Savitri doesn't stop there. She goes into discovering the soul, and at that point, all this play of energy vanishes. So it described very beautifully that suddenly she stepped into a night of God. So what happened to all these? And then she goes and discovers the psychic being. After that, there is the cosmic consciousness and the transcendent and the oneness everywhere. That's a different subject altogether. So let me close with some lines from Savitri. The supreme lines of, you know, take out these lines. I don't have that book. No, you can take out on mobile. It's okay. Because it's about the Kundalini, so I can read that. You type the word sacred beast and then pass on to me. It will come. It's in Finding of the Soul, Canto. But meanwhile, let me read. Because she is the Supreme Mother, and so she understands all about nature and God and soul. But this aspect of all the centers opening up, we will just read Sacred Beast. Found it? Yeah, please pass it. You can be near so that in case I miss it. This is a 30-minute thing. Yes. So this is a description of, in the book of yoga, how these centers awaken, open up, when the psychic being is realized. This is a different process in Sri Aurobindo's yoga. You don't do any willed opening of the centers. Find the psychic being. Give yourself to the mother. And they will open. Because this element is there in Sri Aurobindo's yoga. The Kundalini, but in the reverse way. And they will open, but they will also undergo a change. Because now the power which is coming and pressing upon them is the Divine Mother who brings her alchemist energy. So there is a very beautiful description. A living image of the original power, a face, a form came down into her heart and made of it its temple and pure abode. So she starts spreading out from there. But when its feet had touched the quivering bloom, a mighty movement rocked the inner space. Some people get frightened when this happens because it's a blast of energy. Suddenly your whole being opens into a wideness and nature can go chaotic. There is a phase in yoga when you have lost the mental control and the spiritual control had not yet started. So this is the phase which is being described. As if a world were shaken and found its soul, out of the inconscient, soulless, mindless night, a flaming serpent rose, released from sleep. This is the Kundalini, which is shown as a serpent. Serpent is here the evolutionary energy which is there. It's often given the image of a serpent simply because actually it is coiled up. Means the same energy compresses itself and then it's released. So the whole phenomena is like a serpent flaming up. It's not that you will actually see a cobra. Though if somebody believes it, that's how one will see, it's too bad, you know. But basically that energy, any energy, if you release like that going upward, that's how it will release. And if you actually see going through the spine into the head, it is almost like a hooded cobra. So that's why it is regarded as a coiled serpent which opens up. And then what happens? It rose, billowing its coils, and stood erect, and climbing mightily, stormily on its way, it touched her centers with its flaming mouth. As if a fiery kiss had broken their sleep, they bloomed and laughed, surcharged with light and bliss. Then at the crown it joined the eternal space. In the flower of the head, in the flower of matter's base, in each divine stronghold and nature knot. So these centers are the knots of nature. It held together the mystic stream which joins. The streams we have already spoken about. Ganga, Jamuna and Saraswati. The mystic stream which joins. So Saraswati is the mystic stream. It is running in the middle. But we don't know. It's the Lupta river. The viewless summits with the unseen depth. This is the mystic stream which joins. The string of forts that made the frail defense, safeguarding us against the enormous world. I am a little creature, sir. I am a poor fellow. There is nobody who is miserable. Nobody who is an orphan. We are all sanat. We don't know it. That is the difference. This idea that I am a serpent, I am an animal, I am a human being, I am this, that is ignorance. And it doesn't go by intellectualizing it. It goes when the fence is gone. Then you discover that, oh, I am that. It doesn't go by any amount of thought because we are still roaming slave to nature. If you try by thought, you will end up becoming more chaotic. Because so, safeguarding us against the enormous world. But we should know we are that. Our lines of self-expression in its vast, an image sat of the original power, wearing the mighty mother's form and face, armed, bearer of the weapon and the sign, whose occult might no magic can imitate. So, black magic, white magic, nothing can stand before the original power. Nothing. When people would come and tell mother, she would laugh. There are several instances where she has intervened also. But those are many stories. In fact, she says at one of the places, my child, the hostile forces are very scared of me. Why? Because if you take my name, they run away. Simplest way, call her name, they run away, literally run away. I have really had a long back one experience where a whole world collapsed, filled with these hostile beings, just by saying ma, ma, ma. Such a powerful, because they are afraid. Oh my God, he straight away called the original power. So what will stand? Just her name is enough, because they know that what's going to come now, and if we touch one of hers, what it means, you know, we don't understand what it means to be a child of the mother. When the king of serpents asked the mother that we will not harm any of your children, but you also promise that your children will not harm any of mine. She said, see, I can't give promise on all of them behalf. But what she didn't say was that anyways you can't harm. So she said, how can I promise? Now if they harm, then you will say I have a right to attack. But I am not giving that promise. Anyways, you can't. Those children who depend upon me can never be harmed. So this is how. But we have to depend on her. We trust. That is important. Manifold, at yet one she sat, a guardian force. A savior gesture stressed her lifted arm and symbol of some native cosmic strength. A sacred beast lay prone below her feet. This is the lion. The lion is the protecting power of Durga. And here it is the Kundalini Shakti. A silent, flame-eyed mass of living force. So what happens when this happens in the sadhak? In integral yoga, this happens. All underwent a high celestial change, breaking the black inconscience, blind mute wall, effacing the circles of the ignorance, that is the limiting forms and forces. Powers and divinities burst flaming forth, each part of the being trembling with delight, lay overwhelmed with tides of happiness, and saw her hand in every circumstance, and felt her touch in every limb and cell. Then you will actually see how the mother is working in everything, even in things which our mind believes that no, it is not possible. Yet she is working. So this is how one will begin to experience it, not just by faith, but by knowledge. In the country of the lotus of the head, see, it starts from now, above downwards. In the country of the lotus of the head, which thinking mind has made its busy space, in the castle of the lotus twixt the brows, whence it shoots the arrows of its sight and will, in the passage of the lotus of the throat, where speech must rise and the expressing mind and the heart's impulse run towards word and act, a glad uplift and a new working came. So first he describes these safer territories very beautifully. And what is that new working? The immortal's thoughts displaced our bounded view. The immortal's thoughts, earth's drab idea and sense, all things now bore a deeper, heavenlier sense. A glad, clear harmony marked their truth's outline. So a new kind of thought begins to arise spontaneously. You don't have to say, think positively. You know, when you read all these things, you find it so childish. Don't bother about thinking positive or negative. Think about the mother. Positive things will come as a consequence. Why strain, strive? Then the mind will confuse. Are you sure it is positive thinking? But think about mother, positive will automatically come. Positive here is whatever will carry us towards. Reset the balance and measures of the world. Each shape showed its occult design, unveiled God's meaning in it for which it was made, and thus vivid splendor of his artist's thought. So it is an intuitive knowledge which reveals the details, even a form, stone, you will get the revelation. It is not like somebody you have to read a book and understand, oh, this design means that, this yantra means that. See all the yantras. What is yantra here? Everything is yantra. Like he says, what is Veda? Veda, knower of the unwritten book. In creation there is Veda, secret knowledge. So every form is a yantra through which you can invoke. This is the highest tantra. Highest tantra is to worship all as aspects of the Divine Mother. And the highest yantra is that every form is expressive of the deity. And the highest mantra is whatever name you say or speak, put in it the sense that it is invoking the Divine, Divine Mother. How was she? What mantra she was doing? Oh Lord. She says, that's all as for many. Oh Lord, and the Lord would appear. So there are some mantras which you use traditionally. I have not touched upon that. Maybe some other talk. But mantra is a whole subject in itself. But mantra and puja. Again, traditional puja is do it in a formal way. And mother says, do you think a divine being will actually like if you make him sit on a chair and do all these things? He will run away. But what do divine beings like? How to do their puja? Wherever there is a beautiful thought, a noble gesture, a kind deed, that they notice. So you see the fourfold aspect in the Divine Mother, Maheshwari, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasaraswati. How does Shurbindu say to worship them? So you see in Maheshwari, he describes the psychological aspects. Calm, impartial, wideness, above the thinking mind. If you inculcate, then Maheshwari is happy. And by her touch, one can get it. The true knowledge. Then how is Mahakali happy? Impulses that are swift and straight and frank and sincere. This is Mahakali. Mahalakshmi, ascetic bareness and harshness she does not like. What she likes? The heart's glad uplift towards beauty, ananda, towards true love. But wherever she sees it's mixed in the chalice with hate and jealousies and all, she says, okay. Divine disgust seizes upon us. What does she like? Harmony and beauty of thoughts. Harmony and beauty of feelings, harmony and body in every act and deed, harmony and beauty in life and its surroundings. That is the way to worship Mahalakshmi. What about Mahasaraswati? right adaptation of instrument and its use. Everything for the body itself. Body is an instrument. Right adaptation. Misuse speech and Mahasaraswati will not like it. Misuse the eyes and she will not like it. Misuse your, you know, heartbeat and she will not like it. So she is the perfect perfectionist. So this is a new form of worship. Puja. So yantra, mantra, puja. I think we have just covered that aspect of tantra. So what happens? And the vivid splendor of his artist thought, a channel of the mighty mother's choice, the immortal's will, took into its calm control our blind or erring government of life. A loose republic once of wants and needs. I want this, I want that. So people are running here and there. Now it is under the what mother wants, that let me want. So it is a complete freedom. And yet everything is there. Because what will she want for you? Mahalakshmi will want you to live nicely. You can't do it with this idea. Mahasaraswati will want that everything that you need, the right use, everything is there. Maheshwari will want that the larger lines of your evolution, those doors open. Mahakali will ensure that you progress swiftly. So this is all, and she will keep you protected and safe also. So they change. Life now obeyed. Okay, then bowed to the uncertain sovereign mind, life now obeyed to a diviner rule, and every act became an act of God. It's not like, you know, when we are going to samadhi and standing in front, it's an act of God. Of course it is. But even when we are walking on the road, it can become an act of God. Because it's now a God-driven nature. In the kingdom of the lotus of the heart, love chanting its pure hymeneal hymn made life and body mirrors of sacred joy. In the naval lotus, broad imperial range, its proud ambitions and its master lusts, which we are talking about, were tamed into instruments of a great calm sway to do a work of God on earthly soil. So this is the transformation of this center. In the narrow nether center's petty parts, you see in Vammarg, all these little energies, but what happens here? How they change? In the narrow nether center's petty parts, its childish game of daily dwarf desires was changed into a sweet and boisterous play, a romp of little gods with life in time. Even in those parts, food and everything else, these energies change into a godlike play. No more like the pettiness, oh, I must eat because I am greedy about something. No. So this is the whole change which comes. And in the deep place where once the serpent slept, there came a grip on matter's giant powers for large utilities in life's little space. A firm ground was made for heaven's descending might. Behind all reigned her sovereign, deathless soul. So this the Supreme Tantra which Sri Aurobindo has given, but this is a different kind of Tantra. It cannot be practiced in the traditional ways. All traditional ways, Sri Aurobindo has overpassed them. He has brought in completely new thing. And as I said, take this mantra itself. Ya Devi Sarbhutashi. You are invoking separate aspects. But when you invoke Om Anandamayi, Chaitanyamayi, Satyamayi, Parme, the Supreme Mother, all is contained within that. Or if that is difficult, still simple. Ma, 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 ma. Namaste.